Hello, everybody. This is Brandon Moore with Coaching for Profit. Another podcast episode for you. I know it's been a while since we've had one. Again, Coaching for Profit, where we believe that profit equals your potential minus your barriers. I'm Brandon Moore. I'm a certified wealth strategist, certified public accountant, financial advisor, real estate investor, former CPA business owner. We've divested the CPA firm, and so this podcast is no longer sponsored by the BKMPC Certified Public Accountants, but that's okay. all those listeners that have enjoyed the podcast before will still enjoy it. And we have a new co-host, Wendy Walters. And Wendy, just tell us about yourself.
Hi, Brandon. Thanks so much for inviting me. Yeah, so I am a ghostwriter and an author and an editor. And I have been able to translate those skills into being a business owner and an entrepreneur. I've been in business since 2005. So we've made it through all of that 2008, 2009. We've made it through 2011. We've made it through a pandemic and we're still standing and profitable. And I have the great privilege of working with many C-suite leaders, CEOs, CFOs, you know, not only in the ghostwriting space, but in the branding space and in coming up with ideas for products and just wrapping language around things is my jam, but it's also my business. And I, like you, really, really love to support the entrepreneurs, that entrepreneurial spirit. And I love to see people out there really maximizing the things that they're great at and finding a way to earn a living doing that and creating wealth for themselves, their families, and other people. So I'm excited to join you on this Coaching for Profit podcast.
Awesome. We have, we'd had the release the writer a couple of years ago that I went to, and I thought it was fantastic. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And just take a minute, right, to plug that release the writer, because I think it's something that people need to do. People need to go to.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. So Release the Writer is a seminar I do. It's kind of intensive seminar where we gather some people around. Sometimes it's people who are like burning to write a book. Sometimes it's people who have had some either a draft of a book on their desk for years and years, and they just don't know how to publish it. Some people really have no idea why they're showing up. They just feel like they need to. And by the time they leave, they know there's a book inside of them. Even when it comes like to the aspect of business, which is we're talking about entrepreneurs, there is something so valuable in writing your story or writing your brand story, your business story. It's a way for people to connect with you. I always tell people books are the last business card you ever need. And I literally still get business from around the world from people I've never met or who've never heard me speak. It's because they've read one of my books and have decided that they want to engage with me at the end of reading that book. It's an experience. So like few things will help you clarify who you are and what you have to offer, like writing does. So like that's a seminar where I help amateurs, absolute amateurs who have a seventh or eighth grade English ability to communicate. And we can help get them into a spot where they can actually publish something they're proud of, release that, and that can help build them or their business or their nonprofit or whatever that looks like. So, you know, it's become a network across the country and even across nations that people come from other countries. And it's been just an incredible experience. I love to do it, love to offer it.
That's awesome. Well, today we're going to talk about articulating your what. And I think I stole that from you. I think you were supposed to bring that up, but that's fine. Just the way the conversation is going, it was my turn. So when you, with your experience and your business and articulating what you do for people and what you offer them, how do you go about identifying that and honing that down to where you're not like a general practitioner or a grocery store of goods and products that you're just throwing at people and hoping to see what something will stick?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. Because a lot of the nature of an entrepreneur is that we're good at a lot of things. You have to be. Very few of us have the luxury of just doing the thing that we're great at. If you own a business, you got to be good or get good or proficient at least at a lot of things. And the great temptation is to become a jack of all trades, right? The more we do, the more we do for people, the more things we offer, that means the more business we'll have, the more income we'll have. And that is usually the kiss of death to the small business, right? Too many things. You go into a Chinese restaurant. If I see they have 180 things on the menu, I'm walking out. I want to go to a restaurant that these are the best things that they offer. They do these well. They're not frozen for 6 months in the back room. I want to go somewhere where I know that the quality of the offering is high, that these people know what they're doing. They do it all the time. They do it well. So when we begin to look at like goods and services or products or whatever that is, we like to brainstorm, throw them all out on a wall, and then really kind of put them in a horse race against each other. If I could only do one of these things, if I could only offer one of these things, which one would I offer and why? And once we got that, well, then we pull another one up beside it and we keep that horse race until we narrow it down to something that's reasonable. You know, a jack of all trades is a master of none. So what can we master and be the best at rather than offering everything? So that's kind of where I like to start in the narrowing down process.
Yeah, one of my favorite authors is Jim Collins, and he has the Good to Great, Built to Last, a bunch of those books that I've used, epic books of study and research. And he talks about in Good to Great the Hedgehog Principle, which is the three circles. What can I be the best in the world at? What am I passionate about? And what drives my revenue? And where all those three circles meet and converge, that's what you need to be concentrating on. The hedgehog, it comes from an Aesop story, the hedgehog and the fox. The fox was good at a lot of things. He was good at hunting and running and hiding and trickery. But the hedgehog, it was good at one thing, and that's rolling in the ball and putting the spikes out. And no matter how much the fox wanted to catch the hedgehog, it just couldn't do it. So, I mean, if you're just good at one thing, no matter what that is, if you can be the best in the world at, and again, best in the world, best in your area.
Right.
And that's not to say that there aren't other people doing it really well, but it's something you can be the best at, number one or number two in your area.
Right.
That you're passionate about, not something that you were born passionate, but something you can get passionate about. And then what drives your revenue? Because you can have two of those things and not work out. If it doesn't bring any money in, it might need to be set aside.
It's a hobby. If it doesn't bring money in, it's a hobby. Hobbies always cost us. They never pay us. They always cost us. So
right now, writing books is a hobby.
Yeah, for me, writing books is, that's my thing. That's my bread and butter is writing books for myself and for other people. You know, I like how you talked about, you know, like, what am I passionate about? Which both of us understand that to get to the what, we start with the why.
Right.
Why are we doing this? What drives us? What fuels that passion? And I have learned that passion, some of it is discovered. We discover our passion. We find the aha. Oh, I love to do this. But also, passion is developed.
Yes.
Passion is not just discovered. Passion has to be developed. We have to feed it and fuel it. And I think mastery is one of the ways that passion can get stoked. We feed it by wrapping skills around the passion, wrapping more information and more experiences around the passion. You'll find the passion deepens. If you start wrapping skills, education, information, experience around a passion, and you find yourself being drained or getting tired, ding, 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 this is probably not where you should hold your pursuit. It should be energizing you and fueling you. And it's not work to chase information around a passion. It's not drudgery. So like that's part of the clue to getting to the what is really figuring out the why. Why am I doing this in the first place?
And I think that, you know, people think of passion as maybe charisma instead of something that brings energy. And I think that's a good divider. You know, I was never passionate about tax returns. I don't know anybody that is.
Me either.
but for the first 15 years of my service in tax work, I can honestly say I was passionate about preparing tax returns, not because of what I was doing, it's just the results.
Right.
The what I was actually doing, it wasn't preparing. I was saving my clients money. I was affecting their financial reality in a real way. And, you know, other financial people work for, as auditors. And as an auditor, you work for a big business. You may talk to some of the C-suite people, but you're not really changing somebody's lives.
Right.
When I did tax returns, when I advised people in tax service, it was life-changing to some of those. And that's what drove my energy.
Right.
And I knew then, you know, at some point that energy waned. And I knew that it was probably time to do something else.
Time to do something else. You know, even just the word passion, I think here in the West, we confuse passion with pleasure. Like you hear that, hey, find a job that you love and you'll never work another day in your life, which is absolute poppycock. And I would say stronger words if I wasn't late, right? That is just the furthest thing from the truth. If you even think about the root of the word passion, where passion comes from, think about the passion of the Christ. It's what do you love so much that you are willing to suffer and sacrifice for to see it come to pass?
Yeah.
We are passionate. Think about the, you know, when a woman's going to have a child. We want and we love that child so much. We're willing to endure all of the discomfort of carrying that child and changing our lifestyle and everything. And then the pain of bringing it forth because we're passionate to bring this thing forth. So when it comes to a business owner, it's not like just, ooh, this is what I love to do and I'm passionate about it. This is what I care about so much that I will endure the 15-hour days. I will learn the things I need to know that I don't like to do. I care so much that I'm willing to put my blood, sweat, and tears into it. That's what passion is. It's not just like, ooh, I want to enjoy, live my best life and love every day. It's I care so much about this end result that I'm contributing, what my contribution is, the meaning, the value, the community, whatever it is, it's bigger than me. And so I generally only will agree to work with entrepreneurs who have that I want to be part of something bigger than me. I want to contribute to something bigger than me. If I find someone who's just like really self-absorbed and I love to do this, that is great. I love you. I'm probably not going to work with you.
Yes. So then we've got the passion. We've got the things that we're really good at. So how do we identify the things that we're going to offer to clients? How are we going to refine that?
Yeah.
In our business.
So I think we go back to your hedgehog principle there. What was that first circle, Brandon? What's the first circle?
What can I be the best in the world at?
What can I be the best in the world at? Right. What can I do really well?
Yeah.
What do I already either possess some skills or experience in, you know, that people have come to me for, or that I've got. So we start with that. What can I do well, sustainably, every single time I can deliver on this thing, whether that is a product or a service? What can I deliver with excellence every time? Until I could almost do it in my sleep. I've got so much experience and expertise wrapped around it. So I would say maybe, you know, if someone's starting, either you push it through this grid. If you've already got a bunch of things you do, push it through this grid and give yourself on a scale of 1 to 10. How well do I deliver this thing every time?
Yeah.
And if it's in the 8 to 10 range, all right, let's pull that off in one category. If it's below an 8, we put that in another category. Yeah. If it's 1 to 7, all right. Do I want to invest the energy, the resources, the personnel, the whatever to bring this up to an 8 to 10? Or should I just take this off the menu altogether and we shouldn't be doing this any longer? As an example of that, you know, when I've got a company, Palm Tree Productions, and we help people publish books and, you know, help authors. I've got some skill in branding, corporate personal branding. Okay, well, it was kind of a natural fit in that somebody's launching a book to have websites. And so for a period of maybe 6 or 7 years, we tried to be the one-stop shop and, you know, handle website development. Okay, but the truth is, I wanted to pull my hair out every single time. I couldn't deliver well on a website. I was constantly in that trying to find subcontractors, which never were reliable. And my reputation's on the line because I've subcontracted or I've referred or whatever. And so eventually one day I was like, you know what? It's so freeing for me to say, oh, I'm sorry, we don't do websites. You have to find another resource for that. That's not my expertise. I couldn't serve you well. How freeing. I never actually made any money off of creating anyone's website. All I ever had was heartache, disappointment, and the gap between somebody's expectation, because their experience in writing and publishing was so high with me, and then their experience in having a website published was so low. That gap created something I didn't want in my business, I had to say. That's below an 8. I'm cutting that off. We're never doing another website as long as we live.
Yeah, early.
That's a practical example.
Early in my career, I had payroll services. Was that we did after the fact and live payroll for lots of clients, and it just got to be such a pain because it payroll is such a strict compliance service, and if you get it wrong, you're going to get IRS letters, and then you're spending extra time. Responding to those IRS letters. And what we ended up doing is contracting with wholesaling for a national payroll service who gave us wholesale rates, which gave the clients better service, more options, right, more features. We charged about the same, didn't make a lot of money off of it, never did anyway. But I found that if I didn't have payroll, I wouldn't have clients because they expect that from a CPA firm. But it was something that we didn't do well.
Yeah, that was a good, I love what you just said there. I hope everyone pause, go back to that. I was a CPA firm and people expected payroll. So I had to deliver payroll. Right. And if I wasn't good at it, I needed to find something or someone I could partner with to be able to offer it to my clients. If I didn't offer this thing, I wouldn't have clients. That is a really incredible key for an entrepreneur to know, right? Yeah. So you have to be able to know what someone is going to expect from you. What can I offer? What can I deliver on? And you found, all right, here is my solution to this. Let me find a resource that's going to deliver on this well, because I can't, but it's still going to come underneath the roof because my clients expect it of me. So maybe part of our articulating our what is, what do clients expect from me? What do my customers expect? What must I deliver on? What must I deliver on? If I'm an Italian restaurant, I better have marinara sauce on the menu. And if I'm not good at making marinara sauce, I better find someone I can buy it from to have it on my menu, because nobody's coming in my restaurant and not expecting me to have a decent marinara. I know that's simplistic, but like, that's a great key that you just touched on, probably by accident, which is how this right. usually come about.
Well, I know that, you know, we talked earlier, and it may have been pre-show, but that every year we need to evaluate and talk about that process that you go through of evaluating your offerings, what you do
for
clients, and what makes money, what doesn't make money, what brings energy, what drains energy. Talk about that process.
Yeah. So thank you. It is something that I do. I was telling you, I do it once a year, and I really ought to do it twice a year, but I do it typically in January. Early in January, I sit down when I've got all the books reconciled, and I look back over, look at expense, profit and loss, all those things. I take a look, and I have to look at it through the cold light of numbers. Okay, so of the things that I offered, which of these things were profitable? Which of them made me money? Which of these things are on the rise? Are they growing and increasing? Because maybe I haven't lost money yet, but if I was here the year before and this year it was here, is that a trend? Do I want to commit another year and see it go down any further? So you have to watch what do my clients want from me? What are they purchasing from me? What am I doing that I see on the increase? I want to put my energy behind what's on the rise. I don't want to end up being Blockbuster in a Netflix world. Right. You got to know when to let go. Know when to, like you say, I got to that spot where it was time for me to adjust and change. And so like, it's a good thing, you know, entrepreneurs, especially, you know, we hear about family businesses that are 100 plus years old, and this is the way we've always done it. And this is what which like, there's some beauty in that, but there's also some limitation if you're not willing to allow yourself, you know, just like personal growth. I need to have a growth mindset, which means I can reflect, review, and I give myself permission to change my mind. I'm not a flip flopper. It means I know things today I didn't know yesterday. Yeah. And in the light of this new information, or in the light of new circumstances, how many of us had to pivot and adjust how we did business through the pandemic and now post-pandemic. I had no control over a pandemic showing up, but I couldn't just hold on to the way I'd always done things and like, well, you know, when it's over, we'll get back to that. No, the wise entrepreneur says, how is the market changing? How is the world changing? How is the way goods and services are delivered changing? And I better change with it or I'll be left behind. So it's important to have regular evaluation. Put it on your calendar, a regular evaluation of this is what we do. Is it still profitable for us? Should we be doing something different? Or should we be doing the same things differently? Yeah. And any of those things will allow us to kind of, you know, move forward into the future, move forward looking at trends and paying attention so we don't get left behind and like nobody comes to our store and rents our videos anymore.
Right. And, you know, that's something that, every industry changes. Every you know, of course, the internet revolution, the information age has changed the way a ton of business, but business is still business.
Business is still business.
People pay for the goods and services that they need, that answer needs, that answer the things that they need. And when you are, you have certain products that you're doing and you, like you said, you see a decline or maybe you see quality.
Even if it's static, you know, if it's just that,
you know,
something should shift.
You might have to, you know, sell the practice. You have to sell the product line or just find a new way. And I think that also is how you, are you defined by your products or are you defined by your why? And
right.
Going back to the why, your why should drive which products you're going to offer.
So the I think it was the company that created the mimeograph machine. They thought that their mission was to make those products. And when the industry changed, they didn't change. Instead, they should have seen themselves as a communication company, that their mission was to help provide offices and businesses with means to communicate, means to distribute information. If they would have done that, then they would have found new products to answer the needs of their clients rather than staying with a product that was being passed by.
Right.
In industry.
That's when, you know, the dream, the entrepreneurial dream turns nightmare.
Right.
and I see it happen to a lot of people. And again, this idea of grit and tenacity, which people hold on to, and it is a good thing, but I have seen many entrepreneurs hold on to that original blueprint until it absolutely turns the dream into a nightmare and it's no longer sustainable. And now it's not even sellable. It is so important to keep a growth mindset about everything we do, about our relationships, about products and services, about information, whatever it is. A growth mindset is constantly willing to evaluate and rethink and redress and do things better. You know, that it's important to, just because you did it this way last year and it served you well, you doesn't mean you can just rinse and repeat. You better look at that thing in the changing landscape and just find out, you know, a lot of times it's tweaks. It's not like saying every year, I don't upend my business every year, but I make tweaks every year.
Yeah.
I adjust things, even pricing. I have to adjust pricing that, you know, I was writing in 2005. I'm writing in 2023. If I had the same price on my 2023 that I had in 2005, first, I'd be out of business. But second, it wouldn't take into account the experience I've had from 2005 to 2023.
Right.
And who I've written for and where that's released. Like, so you have to even look at pricing. What am I offering? Yeah. And how much is my market willing to pay? I think some of it is, I think about a question to ask, like, how are my clients better served if I keep this? How would they suffer if I took this away?
Right.
So that's a great question in articulating the what. You mentioned pre-show, we talked about focusing on the benefits. And part of articulating what we do is so that we can highlight to the people who need what we've got, how it will make their life better or easier or more enjoyable or cost them less money, whatever it is. We articulating your what is all about focusing on the benefits.
Yes.
What pain will they avoid, or what enjoyment will they have? What benefit will they have? So that's part of articulating the what is, what are the benefits? You want to maybe expound on that?
Well, you know, in financial services and accounting services, tax services, there's been a really huge trend towards virtual delivery.
Right.
And in one of the analysis that we were making, and we're slowly moving towards more and more a virtual delivery method, because clients weren't wanting that, you know, I'm going to come to your office and drop things off. They want to upload documents. They want a Zoom meeting so they don't have to go into traffic. In San Angelo, Texas, that's not a huge deal, but in Argyle, in Colleyville, Keller, Southlake, that is a big deal. And
right.
So, you have to see how that delivery of your products is affecting your clients. And if your delivery is answering, you know, because maybe you have, I had a client that had an office product, and they had 15 trucks, delivery trucks in the Metroplex. But they started figuring out that their clients really just wanted to drop ship. They didn't mind it coming a couple of days later. And, you know, now those trucks are sitting, it's a sunk cost, but they're more profitable than they were last year.
Right.
And
wow.
So, you know, when we're talking about our what and really identifying, I think a lot of people associate the how with the what. And if you've got to just analyze that, maybe the how has nothing to do with the what.
Right.
If a Zoom meeting is going to have your client feel the same feelings and receive the same service, receive the same benefits that an in-person meeting is, why are you asking them to spend 30 minutes in the car? And so that how doesn't line up with your why even.
Right. Well, it goes back to that question I just said. How is my client's life better by changing this offering, or how would they suffer if, you know, and that is, your client's life is better because they didn't waste an hour in traffic for a 15-minute meeting. You've increased their productivity. You've actually valued their time better. So, you know, it, instead of it feeling, well, it's less personal than in person. Okay. But if the client feels like a Zoom meeting is still eye to eye, face to face, now that that's an accepted means of connecting with someone, right. Like you've actually made things better for them by offering the same that they can upload. It's easy as 1, 2, 3. You've provided convenience for them. You've given them time back in their day. And for an entrepreneur, when you give time back to their day, that is a huge value, huge value. So, you know,
this example, I want to share this example of the how interfering with the what. Because I think it's so ironic. Most people today receive their tax documents in PDF,
right,
electronically through email or a portal at their employer. I was seeing clients download the PDF, print it, gather it together, and then bring it to the office. If you talk about the time that they took, it would be, you know, 15, 20 minutes. That's, you know, 40, 45 minutes of time just to get it to us. Whereas they could have left it electronic and just moved it from one portal to another. 10 minutes.
Right.
So, you know, and a lot of them didn't even think about how much time that they were spending. And we had to do some education. We had to kind of talk about, you know, you're receiving these documents electronically anyway. All we're asking is moving from one portal to the other.
Well, and so that's another key point of articulating the what is education. Education is part of articulating what we offer and how it will benefit the client. And so that's an important part of any business is for people, even go back to that restaurant analogy, the way things are listed on a menu, do they sound appetizing? Do they make me want to order? Or is it just like plain Jane and what it says? So when it comes to articulating what we do, what we have to offer, you know, a lot of time, even if it's a product, the packaging matters. The packaging that's on a product is what entices us to want to check in and unwrap that package and get to it. Same with services, things that we offer, the words we wrap around it, that's our packaging. That's the gift wrap that tells people what to expect inside. And so there's an anticipation to open it and go into it. So, you know, it's our job to educate our clients. It's not our client's job to know what we're about or why it helps them. It's our job to communicate with people why doing business with us, all other things being equal, it's going to be better. And let me tell you why. We articulate what that is.
That, so, you know, that brings up sustainable competitive advantage. You know, that's SCA is a trigger word. What do you call that?
Buzzword
that is used in business a lot. And all it means is what sets you apart than your competitors.
Right.
When we talk about, and I'm going to be teaching an entrepreneur course at our church in the next couple of months. And one of the chapters is goes into developing a niche, because successful entrepreneurs don't like to compete with other people.
Right.
And so the way that you don't compete is you set yourself apart, servicing a niche group in a way that nobody else does or better than anybody else. And so that sustainable competitive advantage, it answers the question, we will win by ... And so if you've got several things that you do and you plug those things into your we will win statement, is it true? That's the question that you ask. Is it true?
Right.
And you can set that up. You can set that up with those three circles again. Each one of those things that you do, put it in that we will win statement, and then answer those three questions at the top, you know, right across, set up your little table. I'm a spreadsheet guy. I love Excel. I'm an Excel nerd. So create your Excel spreadsheet and then, you know, have those three things. And if you answer the question, we will win by, and then it you can be best in the world at, you can be passionate about it, and it'll drive your revenue. If it answers those three questions, then that's probably what's going to set you apart.
Yeah, no, that's excellent. That's an excellent thing to know. And I would like to just encourage all the entrepreneurs listening that there isn't only one path to success. There's a lot of routes that'll get you there.
Yeah.
And your identity is who you are. It's not what you do. Your business identity is who you are, not what you do. And so it's okay to adjust and change and rethink and adapt and grow and evolve the what.
Yes.
If your why stays constant and you are known for delivering excellence, you're known for delivering value, whatever the thing you're known for delivering, how and what you deliver can adjust to meet the landscape that's changing around you so that you won't get left behind. Having an exit strategy is not a lack of commitment. It's wisdom.
Right.
And not just an exit strategy for a business, but an exit strategy for everything you offer, right? Yeah. I will know that the expiration date on this offering has expired when I see... fill those out. When I see that the revenue is consistently on the decline, when I see that people are no longer asking for this, or they're asking me if I could change how it, fill in what those things are, that I will understand that what I'm offering does have an expiration date. And I should have some kind of criteria in my head and regular evaluation. Business owners, we get so in the fray of the day to day that we don't take the time to pause, stop, and reflect. And yep. So that's probably one of the biggest mistakes entrepreneurs make, is because they're always on the go. They start early, they end late, and they get the job done. They answer the fires, they handle the crises. The pause, reflect, consider, adjust is probably one of the weak links of the entrepreneurial spirit.
Yeah. Man, we've talked about a bunch today.
Yeah.
Try to summarize, you know, the three circles, your hedgehog principle. What can you be the best in the world at? What drives your passion? What drives your revenue? Continuous evaluation. Evaluate at least once a year. Ask the hard questions. Know the hard facts. And then, you know, try to find something that nobody else is doing. Set yourself apart. Find a niche. Anything else you want to add before we end this podcast?
Yeah, I think I loved your, you know, that sustainable competitive advantage that we will win by. Those are excellent things to do. Putting the things in a horse race, if you got too many things to do, narrow it down. You know, people pay specialists more than they pay general practitioners. So as an entrepreneur, most of us, unless you've got a big chain that's scaling up, if you're mom and pop or you got five or six or whatever that is, our advantage is probably going to be in the narrowing down, not in the scaling up. So just some of those points. But this was a great topic. It gives me some things to think about too. And maybe I won't wait all the way to January to take out my magnifying glass and look at what I'm doing, I'm doing it, and what benefit it has to my customers. So, yeah, awesome. Thanks.
Thank you, Wendy. Thanks for being a co-host today. And look forward to more podcasts with you. And everybody that's listening, thank you again for listening. Give us a like, give us a share. Any kind of feedback would be great. We really appreciate it. We appreciate the shares. Again, this is Coaching for Profit, where we believe that that profit equals your potential minus your barriers. Signing off.
Signing off.